They go down in the hole in the morning. Board goes over the top of the hole with the sandbags and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then they stay down there till roughly about 8 at night. I dismembered the body, and nothing was working. I was trying to find something that worked that would make them shut up to stop.
So aggressive kind of infliction of pain on these women.
I was trying to find something that would make them behave.
But it was painful to them.
I hope so.
You are now entering The Mortuary, the podcast that offers you an immersive discourse into the occult, paranormal, and conspiracies of the world. We will be your hosts of horror on this journey into the dark. I'm Brock.
And I'm Tanner, and we're back again with the our very first episode of our second... Hold on, wait, a bunch of S's here, okay?
Shit.
Our second Serial Killer Sunday Summer Series Special. Did
wow,
I get it right?
That was impressive.
A lot of S's. But yeah, this is our second time around. We're really excited about it. The
and
Serial Killer episodes were such a great hit last summer, so we had to do it again.
Everyone has really seemed to like them, with the exception of one.
Yeah.
But not getting into that.
We won't talk about that today.
I'm just stoked that we're able to say second annual.
Dad, for real.
Like,
we've been a podcast for
I feel like
a
that's
year.
An accomplishment.
Absolutely.
This is a little tradition that started last year, and we're going to continue on doing it.
Forever.
Forever in the
months
of July
and August.
Until
we run out of serial killers.
And that's where you come in, listener. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, so this is the first installment of Serial Killer Sunday 2019.
Woo!
I'm going to insert That's exactly what's happening right there.
Right on. Well, let's jump into this, man.
All
right.
So we are discussing Gary Heidnik. Have you ever heard of old Gare Bear?
I have not.
You ever heard of Gare Bear?
This will be good.
Well, Gary was actually the inspiration for Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs.
Okay.
So just to give you an insight into...
Well, I feel like Buffalo Bill was kind of an amalgamation of more than one
person. He was.
There was some Ed Gein in there.
But you'll definitely see where the inspiration came from when we get into this. Real quick, before we get into this, the sources for this episode come from Clarissa Culler of AmericasMostHaunted.com, Matt Gilligan of DidYouKnowFacts.com, and just some random other internet sources that, you know, are kind of collective, I guess, whatever.
Okay.
Anyways, Gary Michael Heidnik was born November 22nd, 1943, which my birthday is November 23rd, so... Me and Gare Bear could have had a shared birthday party.
Could have.
He was an American murderer who kidnapped, tortured, and raped six African-American women, killing two of them while holding them prisoner in a pit in his basement in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Heidnik was sentenced to death and executed by lethal injection in July of 1999.
Wow.
So, even though Gary only killed two people, he's still considered, like... to be among like the ranks of serial killers.
Sure.
And I think it's because of because of his brutality, and there's a lot to unpack with him. So he was born, like I said, in 1943, and he was actually an intelligent young man. I think he had like a tested IQ of 130, but he had a lot of social problems. He never quite managed to fit in, and he grew up in a small town in Ohio, which is obviously going to be very cliquey. And so he just He was the oldest of two children raised by Michael and Ellen Heidnik, but the kids weren't raised by both parents at the same time. Michael and Ellen got divorced when Gary was about 3 years old. And so Gary and his younger brother were actually raised by their mother for about 4 years. And then after that, they moved in with their father, where they lived with him for about 7 years. And then for about the last 2 years of their childhood, they both went to a military academy.
So they had a hectic home life.
Right. Not stable in any sense of the word. It was a difficult experience for everyone involved. Gary claimed actually that he suffered emotional abuse by his father, specifically due to his bedwetting problem. So for like whatever reason, Gary just continued to wet the bed for years after moving in with his father. So when he was with his
interesting
mom, it didn't happen, but his mom actually committed suicide, which I'll get to that in a second. And so then he went to move in with his father and began wetting the bed, which, I mean, if a child goes through a traumatic experience, sometimes things like that happen. They regress.
Yeah, I think there's probably some psychological stuff to unpack there.
But for whatever reason, whenever he would do this, after he moved in with his dad and his dad's new wife, his stepmom, it would like so enrage his father that he would make Gary hang his soiled sheets from his open window for all the neighbors to see. Ooh. Which just like petrified Gary. You know what I mean? Like
that's really, some 1940s, 1950s
yeah.
rough justice right there.
Growing up, Heidnik was just a loner. Like I had said before, he didn't have any friends. He was one of those people who would avoid making eye contact. Mm-hmm. At the age of 17, he dropped out of high school to join the army. He trained successfully as a medic in Texas and then was transferred to Germany, where he served at the 46th Army Surgical Hospital. And so at this point, everything's actually going pretty well for Gary, but all this changes in 1962, which is about only 13 months into his military career. So he's, you know, maybe 18 at this time. And he begins complaining of severe headaches and dizziness, and he gets transferred to a military hospital in Philadelphia. There, he's examined by doctors, and they determine that Gary is actually suffering from a schizoid personality disorder, and he's given honorable discharge from the Army.
Huh.
His diagnosis finally allows him to kind of understand maybe like some of his social problems and like why he's just uninterested in friendships and right. just kind of prefers being by himself. And Gary was not the only person in his family to actually suffer from a mental illness. Like I said before, his mother committed suicide in 1970 by drinking muriatic chloride, which is an acid.
God, that seems like a rough way to go.
Yeah. It would literally just melt your mouth and your esophagus on the way down. And his brother actually spent a lot of time in mental institutions and attempted suicide on several different occasions. So a lot of mental problems in his family.
Yeah.
Shortly after his honorable discharge, Gary then went on to become a licensed practical nurse and even worked at a veterans psych hospital for a time before being fired for rude behavior toward patients, which
kind of makes sense.
Schizoid.
Right.
You know. So from 1962 to around 1987, Gary actually spent the majority of his time in and out of psychiatric hospitals, but only this time as a patient himself, not as an employee. He was prone to these like extreme bouts of depression, and he attempted suicide on multiple occasions. And then for some reason in 1971, something clicked and he actually founded his own church.
Wow.
And like appointed him head of this church, and it was called the United Church of Ministries of God. And it's
knowing like what he has done, it's interesting to think about.
It really is. And his church actually grew to a pretty decent size. They had about 50 members, and as the church got bigger, Gary actually reaped the financial rewards, and by 1986 he had amassed over $500,000 for himself, which by today's standards, I think equivalents to well over $1 million.
Sure.
And
kind of a Joel Osteen guy.
Yeah. He then invested in Playboy magazine and drove a really, really fancy Rolls Royce car.
Wow.
Yeah. And so
that is a total flip flop.
Yeah. During his days at the church that he founded, Gary Heidnik preyed on vulnerable women. He went on to marry once, but he had children with several different women, and these like relationships that he had, if you'd even call them that, were anything but normal. So his first and only marriage was with a Filipino woman named Betty Disto. You know, I'm bad with names. She immigrated to the U.S. to marry him from like a mail order bride type program.
Oh my God.
But they actually like courted and talked with each other for 2 years prior to her moving to marry him.
Okay.
And so he was in contact with her. So it was like her choice to move here to marry him because they had been in contact for 2 years beforehand.
Still weird, but.
Right. Knowing virtually nothing about him except for like what he had disclosed to her via letters for the last 2 years, she soon found out about Gary's, like personalities or just the way, the nature of who he was. On several occasions, Gary forced Betty to watch him have sex with other women, and he also raped and assaulted her numerous times until she was able to flee back to her home country pregnant with his child.
Oh, wow.
So she...
This dude is screwed up.
Yeah, man. She actually got mad at him because she found out he was cheating on her, and once she called him out for cheating on her, he then forced her to watch him have sex with all these different women.
Good Lord.
And then would go and like rape her. And so in their short time of being married, she ended up getting pregnant with his kid and then flees the country. Gary's previous child, born to a different woman, Gail Lincow, was given up for foster care shortly after their birth. And another child was born to a woman named Anjanette Davidson. And this woman was actually mentally disabled. I think she had an IQ of like 48. She's very illiterate. She was in and out of homes, and that child was immediately taken away. But Anjanette was more than just a sexual conquest for Gary. She was kind of his official transition into crimes that would basically define him as a serial killer and just him as a horrible person.
Right.
In 1978, Gary Heidnik signed his girlfriend, Anjanette Davidson's sister, out of a mental institution where she lived on a day pass. Her name was Alberta Davidson, and he brought her to his house, where he then kept her there, held her captive for 10 days, and repeatedly raped, sodomized, and tortured her.
When an African-American woman?
I'm not quite sure.
It's not one.
She's a mentally disabled person,
okay,
that he took advantage of. He right. checked her out of the hospital, saying that he was his sister's boyfriend and that he was going to like take her out for the day.
His sister's
boyfriend. This is Anjanette's sister.
Okay.
His girlfriend.
Okay, yeah.
That he had a kid with. Yeah. So he takes her back to his house and basically kidnaps her for 10 days, rapes and tortures her, and when police finally find her, she's just bloodied and terrified and hiding in, like, the basement coal bin. So Heidnik is charged then with kidnapping, rape, unlawful restraint, false imprisonment, involuntary deviant sexual intercourse, and interfering with the custody of a committed person. But his original sentence was overturned on appeal, and Heidnik spent only 3 years in jail and was released in April of 1983 under the, quote, supervision of a state-sanctioned mental health program.
Wow.
So because of his mental health problems, he only got 3 years for torturing this woman and raping her.
That's absurd. I don't see how he could be considered safe for society.
Yeah, I don't either. Now based out of Philadelphia, Heidnik moved through the city and was kind of on the hunt for more victims and determined to not get caught this time. So his first new victim, now that he's out of jail, was Josefina Rivera, who was 25 years old, and she was an African-American woman. He abducted her on November of 1986. So she was a prostitute, and she came over to his house. He had sex with her, and as she's putting on her clothes, he comes up from behind her and begins to strangle her. And then he takes her down to his basement and chains her up. And he actually, I think, like super glued the bolts into her handcuffs. So like once they're like latched on, he made it to where you couldn't unscrew them.
Right.
Within 3 days, Gary Heidnik showed up with Sandra Lindsay, who was only 24 years old. She was a mentally disabled person and went missing on a walk to the store.
Man, got his hands on another mentally disabled woman. That's
he
so
chained
sad.
Her in the same way that he chained up Rivera and forced the woman to watch each other be raped.
Ugh.
On December 22nd, Heidnik picked up single mother Lisa Thomas, who was only 19 years old, while she walked in the freezing cold by offering her a lift. He bought her lunch and brought her back to his house for a glass of wine. When she awoke from whatever had knocked her out, she had been raped and chained in the basement as well.
Of course.
Heidnik kindly introduced her to the other captive women and then made them all sandwiches after raping Thomas again. On New Year's Day, 1987, Deborah Dudley was brought into the basement. However, she was much more aggressive and confrontational, which forced Gary to make some changes. He purchased a portable toilet, tampons, and allowed the girls to bathe now and again. because...
So these, the original girls, are they still down there in
yeah.
the basement?
Oh, yeah. He's just adding wow. more girls to his collection in his basement.
Jeez.
And what he actually has is he has dug a small pit, and he has basically forced all these women into this pit in his basement, where he then puts boards on top. So they can't really sit up. They're all laying down on top of each other, and they only get out when he wants to either beat them or rape them.
That's kind of reminded me of Buffalo Bill.
Exactly. Except that hole was much deeper in the movie. Right, this right. was like, I think, maybe a 3-foot deep hole.
Yeah.
So not a whole lot of room to move at all. On January 18th, 1987, there was one more victim, Jacqueline Askins, who was 18 years old. And with this, Heidnik seemed to basically be content with that number of victims. Yet there were times where Gary's plans didn't go as he wished, and he would then punish the girls for misbehaving or for talking back to him. Like, for example, for as punishment for trying to crawl out of the pit that he had dug, he hung Sandra Lindsay by her wrists from a beam. A full week later, Sandra was dead. Once Heidnik realized this, he brought her body upstairs and dismembered it with a chainsaw.
Did she just die from...
She died from starvation, actually. He had hung her up and would feed her, and she continued to talk back to him. So I think he like let her starve for like 4 days or something. God. And then he finally went to give her food, and she was dead.
The stuff that goes through my mind is like circulation of like blood circulation. Right. Like, God, her hands were probably purple and blue. Just
awful.
That's so nasty.
Well, so then he carries her up to... out of the basement, dismembers her with a power saw, some people say chainsaw, and then boils her and feeds pieces of her to his dogs. And to his captives in the cellar, he fed her to them by mixing her remains in with other food.
Ugh.
And so there's actually a friend of Gary's who would come by every now and then, and he knew Gary was doing this. He didn't report. We'll get to that. But he and his testimony that he gave, he like got a plea deal for testimony against Gary Heidnik. He says he remembers like walking into the kitchen as Gary is basically dismembering these body parts. And he says that there's a head boiling on the stove, like in a pot of water.
Oh, my God.
Boiling on the stove.
Go to the police?
No. He fed Sandra's remains to the other girls. And Deborah Dudley was also punished and electrocuted in a pit of water. So what has happened is his first victim, who was, who was Josefina Rivera, she begins to develop this like Stockholm syndrome, right? To right. where she actually begins to help Gary out in exchange for special treatment.
Hmm.
She gets to be out of the pit just for like recreation time, just to be right. out of the pit. And she actually helped him electrocute Deborah Dudley. What they did is they left the girls in the pit and they filled it with about 6 inches full of water.
No.
And then he cut off the end of a extension cord. So there are exposed wires, and they put the cord in the water and would like hold it in there for a few seconds to electrocute them.
Just electrocuting them? Wow. Yeah,
and they actually ended up frying Deborah Dudley.
But the other girls lived.
Right. The other girls lived through the electrocution.
Did they have serious
except
injuries?
For Rivera. Rivera didn't right. get electrocuted.
So that's the girl number two that has now been murdered.
Right. And all the girls in the story, I should have said this earlier, I apologize, would get continually beat by Heidnik, and he would actually drive screwdrivers into their ears.
Ugh.
So that they couldn't hear. That was one of the things that he
is
famous for.
So horrible. Yeah.
And so Rivera.
So they're deaf at this point.
I'm sure.
Somewhat deaf.
I mean, you'd have to be. And, good. You know, just like untreated wounds. So after Deborah Dudley died, this compelled Heidnik to abduct another victim named Agnes Adams. And she was a prostitute that had been hired from Gary before. However, one of Gary's victims started to figure him out. Like Gary, this victim was a quick judge of character. She was clever, and she was just as motivated to escape. So while all this is going on, Gary's basically trying to abduct more people, and he actually used Josefina Rivera to help kidnap Agnes Adams. But Josefina is trying to fool Gary. She's like studying him. She's seeing his behavioral patterns. She's getting to know him.
Yeah.
So that she can escape. She begins to realize that, as cute as it was, Gary had a desire to have an actual, like, true connection with somebody. Even throughout the torture, rape, and death all around her, she actually saw that Heidnik seemed to, quote-unquote, care what the woman thought of him. That's why he went and got tampons in a portable toilet.
Okay.
And he would kind of cave in if they pressured him enough to their needs.
That kind of reminds me of the movie Misery.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
So as revolting as it was, she set out to befriend Heidnik. She did as he wished and professed her understanding whenever she had a chance. Eventually, Heidnik allowed her upstairs to cook for him and to watch movies together before chaining her back in the basement. So she's really developing a closeness with him to where he's starting to feel like he can trust her.
See, this is what I'm curious about, though. Like, you're sitting on a couch watching a movie with the guy. What stops you from bashing him over the head with something and taking off out the front door? I mean, man. Of course.
You know what I mean?
If I had to choose,
she may be chained while there. You know what I mean? Yeah, she may still be bound, partially bound.
He could have huge deadbolt locks on the doors that you know, we don't know about, you know, so. Interesting.
So this article actually says, could Rivera have escaped during those times? And
which
almost
is what
certainly.
The question I was asking,
right.
Yeah.
But that's not what she did. Her goal wasn't just to save herself, but she wanted to save all the women. Rivera knew that if she escaped and Heidnik was there, he would immediately kill the other captives, and she felt like she couldn't take that risk.
For sure. I see that.
So what does she do is she convinced Heidnik to take the latest captive, Agnes Adams, home to say goodbye to her family. After all, that, you know, all the girls were going to be together with him forever. So Gary Heidnik actually agrees to this. He's like, she talks him into it. She sways him. And so he took Rivera and Agnes Adams back to the back into the city, and he parked at this gas station that was several blocks from where he had, I think, picked up Agnes or from one of their homes. And she told him, you know, not to pull up in front of the home in case the family members identified the car. And he, you know, thought that was a good idea. And they said they'd be back in 15 minutes, you know. And of course, he threatened them, said, you know, if you're not back, I'll kill you. I'll kill the girls.
Right, right.
So the girls walk calmly around the corner. And once they're out of sight, they run to the nearest phone booth and call 911. Squad cars were nearby, thankfully, and they arrested Heidnik there at the gas station and then went to his home where the other girls were and rescued the girls.
So that was his own dang fault, man.
Right. He got played.
He absolutely would have killed all of those girls,
too. 100%. So that was on March 24th, 1987. Gary Heidnik is apprehended in the vehicle at the gas station where he sat waiting for the girls to return to him. On July 6th of 1999, Gary Heidnik was executed by lethal injection. At the time of his death, no member of his family made arrangements to claim his body. So, even though Gary technically only killed two people, I think he represents a very complex case in that he has a multitude of issues that seem to be at play almost the whole time throughout his life. Right. You know, he had a continual diagnosis of mental illness from basically adolescence all the way through adulthood and numerous unsuccessful suicide attempts.
When he's absolutely a serial rapist.
Oh, 100%, and abuser.
Mm-hmm.
Other close members of his family also suffered from mental illness, like we stated before. So it's assumed that there was some bona fide disease process going on at a cognitive and emotional level with him and other members of his family. Now, an interesting fact is that Gary's daughter and wife, or ex-wife, actually pleaded for him to not be
executed. Right.
Because of his mental illness.
Okay.
Obviously, they were unsuccessful in doing that.
Yeah.
But while they were pleading for Gary to not get the death penalty, Gary's father was demanding that his son be killed, which I thought was really interesting and was a sign of the, you know, of the abuse that he caused or the lack of compassion for his son.
Absolutely.
Which, obviously, if a family member is doing these horrible things, I don't know how much compassion they deserve.
Yeah, when you know all the details, it would be hard.
But definitely. At the same time, I just thought that was an interesting tidbit. Additionally, Heideck claims to have been abused emotionally during his childhood years, like we were saying, by his father. And his father denied these allegations. But at the very least, he had a lot of family dysfunction going on growing up. Living between his mom, his father and stepmother, and military school suggests that there was at least some level of neglect or misbehavior that warranted several custodial changes. Now, to add even more confusion to this picture, I thought this was really, really interesting. Heideck admits to being given LSD while in the army. And of course, this was...
That's interesting. It would have been right about in the 60s that MKUltra was being tested on people.
Right. When the government was giving LSD to civilians and people in the army, right. He was one of them. And it's likely that he also experimented with drugs on his own. His exposure to the psychedelic drugs could have had lasting effects and resulted in psychotic episodes that persisted long after he ceased their use.
Well, especially someone who grew up already with mental illness.
And one thing that I thought was interesting is that he didn't start having these headaches and dizziness until he was 13 months into the army.
Right.
So what if LSD and whatever other military testing that they were doing caused these personality splits in him, caused him to develop this mental illness?
It's very possible.
You know, coming from an already broken childhood.
Sure.
He would have been with our discussions patient. On MKUltra, I thought that was really, really interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's little details like that that kind of like magnifies the whole web of how, you know, like everything is connected, and you start to see those little bits and pieces coming together to make the bigger puzzle, bigger picture. So
now, I don't want it to be twisted on. We're obviously not on Heideck's side, and we're just analyzing a lot of different components.
Not justifying
him. As far as psychopathy goes, I think he was pretty high on the scale, because even in like later interviews and from what we've seen, he basically lived with almost this complete lack of empathy. And his idea that he could collect women like objects and just kind of do as he pleased suggests that there was a huge disconnect. And apparently he always harbored this view of women, even back in his school days, if the reports of his haughty boyhood behavior is to be believed. He also had the ability to keep his house of horrors and invest money in the markets, making him capable of at least some sort of like organized thought and planning. Like I said, he invested in Playboy. He was the leader of a church, but he also would kidnap women and torture them.
Right. He was cognitive enough to do those things. So it makes you wonder.
So regardless, it's clear that Gary Heideck was a killer who wasn't satisfied to abduct a victim and dispose of them only to keep a trophy. He needed to keep them alive, which I think really sets him apart from other serial killers. He needed to literally possess his victims in order to carry out his sinister plans. And to me, this makes Gary Heideck an extremely rare serial killer or criminal.
Sure.
But obviously, in the end, he was outmatched by the person who would accept the label of a victim only to be turned into the hero instead, which I think is even more rare. So, Josephine Rivera still tells the story today. She's done several interviews after the fact. She talks about her experiences willingly and openly.
Sure.
Which is very surprising. So, in a nutshell, in a tight 30-minute episode in the first installment of Serial Killer Sunday, that, listeners of the Mortuary, is Gary Heideck.
Well, Brock, I think that was a really strong start to Serial Killer Sunday's summer special series. I got it all mixed up and confused. Oh, well. But listeners who are maybe new to the Mortuary podcast, if this is your first time checking us out, we are a weekly podcast now.
We are.
We began as a bi-weekly podcast, but we, as you heard in the intro, we focus on subjects of the occult and the paranormal, lots of conspiracies. We're big conspiracy guys, so if you enjoyed this episode, I highly suggest you check out our free bi-weekly episode, and if you like what you hear there, consider becoming a Patreon supporter. For just $1, you can get access to our weekly episodes. and lots of other really cool content. So
it's very cool. So thank you guys for listening. As always, for the latest blog posts and exclusives, be sure to check out themortuarypodcast.com. We will see you guys in the next installment of Serial Killers Sunday.
Sundays. Goodbye.
Wait, no. Do one more.
Sundays. Goodbye.